Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, it is an absolute extraordinary honor to have Dr. Gladys Cruz on VFE. Dr. Cruz and I, we were just talking about the superintendency and the role of being a superintendent before we actually started recording today's episode. But such an honor to have Dr. Cruz. She is the proud superintendent CEO of QSTAR 3 BOCES in New York, which covers three counties. Also, Dr. Cruz, currently your term is not up because you are still serving as the AASA president, correct?
That is correct. Through June 30.
Yes, still president of AASA, and then a national influencer in the education ecosystem. So without further ado, it is so good. New York is in the house fully representing Dr. Gladys Cruz. Dr. Cruz, how are you this morning? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. I am great. And, you know, this is the time of year, which is bittersweet because we are in the midst of celebrations, graduations, moving up ceremonies, that those end of year events that we celebrate with our students and all of the successes we've had during the 24-25 school year. And I know that our listeners are in the same, you know, just finalizing the 24-25 school year and celebrating their students and their staff.
Absolutely. It's that time of the year. I always say June, we have, we're out 7 days a week because there's an activity going on somewhere during this time. But just to see all of the smiles, the families, showing appreciation and the gratitude that they put, all the hard work that they put in to their kids just to see them, whether it be moving up or graduation. But thank you, Dr. Cruz. I know you have a busy, busy schedule, and to make time for this conversation, such an honor to have you here. But we're going to dig right into the questions for the podcast. So are you ready?
I am ready. Go for it.
Let's do it. So we know that, Dr. Cruz, you serve on a variety of different roles. We know that you're serving as the CEO superintendent of QSTAR 3 BOCES in New York, of course, AASA president, but an influencer in the ecosystem. But to advance the work of all, we want to know, what is your excellence and equity song that defines your leadership signature in the field?
Okay, so I love Bob Marley. So get up, stand up, right? Because it reminds us about the importance of standing up for our rights, advocating for a better world. Public education is one of those fundamental rights. And I continue to work with my colleagues and my at QSTAR 3 BOCES, in the region with the superintendents in the 22 districts that form this cooperative to really ensure that we are meeting the needs of all students of all ages, abilities, backgrounds, and interests. Because, you know, I'm a big believer that you need to really look for those passions that our children have and develop those so that they can be part of that journey in creating the learning experiences. And of course, you talked about parents. Parents are so critical in that whole ecosystem, right? Because they're the first teachers. They know their children best, and we need to make sure that we continue to work with them as partners.
Absolutely, Dr. Cruz. I love the fact that you highlighted Bob Marley, one of my all-time favorites. Get up, stand up for your rights. Love that song, Dr. Cruz. I'm going to have to play it after our podcast recording. But 22 districts, right, within that consortium that you are leading. Unbelievable, great leadership, Dr. Cruz, with that. But I want to it a statement that you state that you highlighted with regards to students being a part of that journey. It goes back to the work that I did with AASA, speaking about that on the Learning 2025 National Commission, being a part of the development and design of that report, and it automatically goes back to that co-authoring theme. And I remember being a part of that group talking about what is actual co-authoring and co-designing for students. And that resonates with me, right? Because we want to be able to empower the voices of, I like to say, our most important customers, who are families and our students, and bringing it back to the parents. I did some extended research, what I call the inclusive triangle, where parents and communities are anchored by students. But yes, advocating, get up, stand up for your rights. I'm definitely playing that. It's playing in my head right now, Dr. Cruz. Playing right now in my head. But I want to highlight, right, the 22 districts that you're leading that are in the Questar 3 BOCES consortium, right? So for my listeners and viewers of VFV that do not know the education structure of New York at the state level, first, can you unpack your work in this role and how you're achieving education coherence among the 22 districts under your leadership? And then second, what are the major initiative accomplishments and next steps for your portfolio in the 24-25 academic year?
So, as you said, I lead the Questar 3 BOCES Board of Cooperative Educational Services. Many of our listeners probably are familiar with the term Education Service Agency. So, in New York, the BOCES are an integral part of the education ecosystem. So, we have the State Education Department. And then we have 37 BOCES, which pretty much bring together all of the districts except the Big Five. So you have Rochester, Syracuse, Yonkers, New York City, and I'm missing one. I'm missing one.
Is it
Rochester,
Buffalo?
Syracuse, Yonkers, Buffalo, and New York
Buffalo,
City.
yes.
Yes. So the Big Five, they can participate, and they do in initiatives of the BOCES. The BOCES that's close to them, but they are very big entities, and they are not part of technically of the BOCES structure. So, as a BOCES district superintendent, it's a duality of role, right? So you are a superintendent for all your educational programs. So I have two technical schools. I have two STEM high schools, comprehensive high schools located on college campuses. We have standalone schools that are specialized in exceptional children, different disabilities. And so I oversee all of those schools. So we have an associate superintendent, we have assistant superintendent, we have all of those roles that a school system would have. And then I also oversee the region, right? And I'm the commissioner's representative in the region. So, if there's anything that comes up, or for any priorities that come from the state, I communicate these. I serve as a liaison between the State Education Department and the districts. So, if there's an issue in a district, I bring it to the state, or if there is a new initiative for a priority from the state, I bring it to our districts. So, it's a very busy role. It's a very dynamic role. We meet with the Commissioner of Education every month, and we go over the priorities. You probably have seen that New York has just, I was a part of the Blue Ribbon Commission, and there's a new graduation measures that just came out. one of the things that they're proposing is to adopt a portrait of a graduate. So all of these things, I bring them back to our to our districts. I meet with our superintendents once a month, and we discuss any issues that may be that need attention from the state or that need advocacy, whatever that may be. So I'm constantly moving between our own education systems that we're facilitating here and we're overseeing, and then the bigger system. And I will meet with boards of education. If there is a need for a superintendent, I often assist the boards in doing those searches. So it's a very big role. We have over 300 programs and services, and a lot of these programs go beyond our three counties. We have, for example, we have a state aid financial planning service that pretty much serves every district in the state of New York, and including even the Big Five, some of the Big Five. And it also, so well beyond our region, we also do other services. We do anything from fire inspections to health and safety issues to financial planning to professional development. We have a very robust school improvement office, and we send out coaches not only to our region but even beyond our region. So it's a very comprehensive a role. So looking ahead for next year. So we are expanding some of our programming for students. We are adding a new electrical trades program. You probably know that the trades right now are have there's a comeback because a lot of the workers in the trades are of that age that they're starting to retire. So we are expanding our electrical trades program, our welding program. There's a huge need for welders in this region. And we're also adding a medical program. So, what I love about our ecosystem is that I can create change probably much easier than a school district. So, we could create that electrical trades program with no issue. We are that medical program. So these medical programs, they're seniors only programs. I call them my gifted and talented. I also call them, they're bridge programs between the high school and college. So these are college preparatory seniors only program. And it is to for students to explore their passions, for example, in the medical field. And this program is housed in a hospital. So students get to do rounds with doctors and things that I wouldn't be interested in, but it's their passion. And that's what we try to do, is to find, where the needs are and then align those to our programming. And it's a great, element of the ecosystem of New York State, because we're able to do things that districts can't do. So, for example, if you have, let's say you were in my region, and you had two students interested in a medical program. Well, you're not going to create a program for two kids, right? So, but we can create it for 20 kids, and we can bring students from all of our districts. So that's how the BOCES functions. In our 22 districts, we have more than 28,000 students. And then in our we serve about 1,600 students directly. And that they, as I said, they're from all abilities, ages, backgrounds, and interests.
Great, great work, Dr. Cruz. Really want to expand on your work with the specific CTE programs that you're developing, because I always like to distinguish it in these three stages of education: the BC stage of education before COVID, DC during COVID, and the AC stage after COVID. And when I look at some of these broad studies, Morgan Stanley just came out with a study, or I believe it was roughly a couple of years ago, but it was recent. I just saw it, where only 15% of knowledge base jobs will be eliminated within the next 5 years. To couple the Oxford study, where by 2035, I believe, in the study stated that 47% of jobs in the economy are going to be automated. So when we talk about technical skill alignment with AI skills, essentially, the electrical trades, the welding focuses, and the medical focuses, nice synergy with these technical skills and AI skills, very intentional with the design and development to be in alignment of the demand for jobs, Dr. Cruz. And love the fact that you stated with the portrait of a graduate, you know about the platform that I'm building to elevate the portrait of a graduate. I always say that there's elements with a portrait of a system to ensure that the portrait of a graduate becomes realized, that alignment. But 28,000 students, 3 different counties, woo, 22 different districts, Dr. Cruz, you got your hands full, 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 full. But wait, Eric, even more, your plate is overflowing because you are the president of AASA. I don't know how you do it, but you provided context for your work in New York. But now I want to expand on this, your work nationally with AASA. Okay. And you provide direct leadership with many of the national initiatives. There are a myriad of different policy and governance work that you're doing with districts across the country. But as you reflect on your presidency as for AASA, what are the major accomplishments, Dr. Cruz, that have been achieved when education has been polarized nationally? I know you're dealing with this, superintendents across the country coming to you with specific, whether it be feedback, recommendations, strategies on how to handle this polarization across the country. So, what are some of the major accomplishments that you and AASA have accomplished to handle this across the country? And then, second, in the context of the Learning 2025 National Commission work that we talked about previously, what elements do we have to deepen as a coalition to prepare students beyond 2025, which is the next academic year?
Absolutely. I came up with you talk about before COVID, during COVID, after COVID, and that's such a huge that COVID made such a huge impact on us individually, on the system as a whole, on the ecosystem of education. I came up with a platform, and you probably heard me talk about this, leading in a new era, new challenges, new approaches. And I really talked about, a lot of the things that we're dealing with. We're seeing that the superintendency, people are rethinking it to stay in the field as superintendent. So we're seeing a lot of turnover in the superintendency. If you look at the research, there's a lot of the big cities and the big systems have had turnover in the last 4 or 5 years. People who might have stayed are leaving the profession, and looking for something that is less polarizing, right? Because we are dealing with a lot of it's like a storm of issues that have come upon the system. So I one of the things that I did was, I came up with a podcast, and what we did in those podcasts is really address different issues that are affecting the system as a whole, the ecosystem. So we talked about AI, and I had a podcast on AI. We talked about the teacher shortages. We talked about the last one that we did is about cybersecurity. We have so many challenges that we're all dealing with, and trying to just stay focused on why we exist, which is to provide educate the best educational opportunities for all of the students that we have in front of us, right? Regardless of their abilities, their interests, their passions. I try to ensure that that was one of the areas that, you know, I wanted to talk about those themes. And we have some amazing podcasts. If our listeners haven't listened to them, I encourage you to go to the AAA's website and look for the podcast with the president. So that was one way that I was trying to get the message out. I also took the opportunity of my monthly columns to write about those issues. So I did that too because I was trying to, you know, address the issues. And I got a lot of positive feedback from fellow superintendents that would read the columns and just, you know, encourage others to read them and say, you know, I really appreciate our president because she is addressing needs and issues that we're dealing with. So I took advantage of those outlets to really address a lot of the issues that we're dealing with.
Absolutely.
I think that we're as ASA, what we're trying to do is we're really trying to change that narrative. You know, I'm a product of public education. I am a big believer of public education as really the bedrock of our democracy. We have the responsibility of ensuring that our children have developed the abilities, have the content knowledge, have the skills to be engaged, productive citizens, right? And knowledgeable. And we need to make sure that our students are critical thinkers, that they are able to discern between what's true and what's not true, because we have a lot of alternative facts out there. So those, you know, I try to address those things within our region. I've brought the Learning 2025 initiative to our region, so all of our districts can participate in Learning 2025. I bring the folks from ASA and different speakers. We worked with Bill Daggett for over a year. One of the things that we were trying to focus this region that and they are all, you know, working on it in some way or fashion is artificial intelligence and the impact that artificial intelligence will have on our systems, right? This summer, I partner with our local universities and colleges all the time, and I have a great partnership with SUNY Albany. And this summer, we're offering an artificial intelligence course, actually, so teachers can actually get deep into, you know, I say play with it and test it and, you know, talk about how they are using it or how they intend to use it. So that's something that we've been doing in the region, and just keeping that focus on students. I'm a big believer of you know, a student agency, right? And having students really be part of their journey. So that's we talk about in Learning 2025, we talk about student-centered, equity-focused, future-driven. We need to keep those in the forefront because too many classrooms of today still look like classrooms of the 1900s, right? Too many, and we were, you know, I always talk about the Committee of Ten who dictated all those courses, right, in the 1800s that are still driving our school systems, our high schools, you know, and that was a college preparatory program of studies. We have moved beyond that, as I said earlier. You know, career technical education is critical in our
Absolutely.
current reality, and we need to make sure that those students who may not want to go to college are prepared for their futures, not ours, you know. So that is a so that's why you know we're as a agency, a ASA is really looking to change the narrative around public education. Public education is probably one of the best kept secrets. In our executive committee meetings, you know, I've asked our committee members to share what they're doing because so we often sit in those those structured meetings, and we really don't know what people are doing. So I like to start off with the sharing. What are you doing in your district? Share three things that you're proud of. If somebody was moving into your district, what would you tell them about your district? Three things. And then what are you kind of stuck on? What are you struggling with? So some of those things that we just talked about, polarization of public education. So we and then we're able to really work as an association to address those needs. So I think, those are some of the things that I've been working on this past year, and I feel very good about. And then the fact that we can't do this alone. I say to my to I, when I have an opportunity, I say we have over 400 partners in our re with our system for 1,600 kids and 2,800 kids, 28,000 kids in the larger system. And so we partner with businesses, we partner with community agencies, we partner. I have a it's fascinating because prior to the pandemic, I had created a community-based task force. And what I was doing is bringing all the community-based agencies together. I had a representative from superintendent from each of our counties to really talk about what are they doing to assist families and students. Because the reality is we're serving the same customers as we talked earlier, right? The families and the students of the so why don't we all get in tandem and just do it together and do it. I like to use we're all rowing in the same direction. We need to do that so that people aren't getting mixed messages. And then I've continued that group. Just this past Friday, when I met with the superintendents, I reached out to them, and some of them came to our meeting, and I had like the parole officers talk about how PINS has changed, and what they are able to do has changed. So how can we better work together? Because we know that there were mental health issues prior to the pandemic, right? But the
Absolutely.
pandemic really exacerbated those, and we're dealing with behaviors with mental health issues that have been, really challenging to us. And then, the federal government gave school systems funds, and then those funds are going away. So how can we continue to work with all of our partners to ensure that we meet the needs of our students and families?
Yeah, Dr. Cruz, you covered a lot, right? And the compounding, right, issues, the multitude of the variables that we're dealing with as leaders. One resonating theme that you highlighted was truly democratizing AI within our operating model in education, right? And I think that's going to be a huge inquiry endeavor. That we're going to have to continue to unpack, have this level of, and again, this goes back to the Forge Summit that we attended, systems shifting in the context of moving traditional elements from the operating model to these adaptive elements within a learning ecosystem where AI has to be a coherent and aligned strategy. Dr. Cruz, I've been going around the world, right? I can, wow, internationally too, where the common, I like to say, problem practice is the identification of disparate, I like to say, applications without a level of coherence or alignment to truly impact the model. So really been unpacking that. I think that's going to be very important, right, when we talk about AI awareness and AI readiness within the district as well. But mental health, and I'm sure you know about this statistic, Dr. Cruz, but it was fascinating to see that most of the 211 calls during COVID were friends supporting friends. And we're talking about students supporting students. You would think it would be adults calling on behalf of their children or other families, but it was students and students. Dr. Cruz, and this is kind of a sub question, mental health, right? We're seeing some alarming behaviors, increase of suspensions. There was, I believe it was from the CDC where I saw an abnormal percentage. I don't want to highlight the percentage, but not specifically, but it was over 30% of students that were feeling sad or some type of suicidal thoughts. Now, how do we curtail that if this is data coming from the CDC, Dr. Cruz, where yes, when I look at it from a systems redesign standpoint of the hardware structures and the software systems that we are integrating, but if we don't have students' basic needs not being met, no matter how comprehensive the transformation is, we won't be able to reach our students because there are other external factors that that they're dealing with. How do we curtail that or provide the necessary supports, Dr. Cruz, when we know these federal funds are going to run out by this September?
See, and that's why I said, we can't do this alone. So we need to look for partners. Sometimes, we meet with this task force and we bring in the mental health offices from the three counties, and we talk about, okay, so what's available? How can we partner? How can we? And BOCES has an incentive. I didn't talk about this. So BOCES has a financial incentive for a district to participate and collaborate and partner. So we are able to partner with, let's say, mental health agencies, and if we have two districts or more participating in an initiative, they can get aid on it. So they get monies back the following year. So that's an incentive for New York. I know there's a lot of listeners that have ESAs in their school systems and they don't have this. They're jealous, but that is something that we are able to do. But we need to educate the whole child. We need to be cognizant of those needs. I remember bringing a group of, I love to bring groups of students to speak to legislators. I brought a group of students to speak to the Board of Regents. That New York State has a Board of Regents that sets policy. And I brought a group of students, Hispanic students, to the Board of Regents. And one of the students said to, the Board of Regents asked, what can we do to help with mental health? That was the question on the table. And the student, not adults, the student said, the Board of Regents needs to do more so that staff get trained on identifying those risk factors. Okay. So I was sitting there and I was like, okay, so the student was saying, we need to make sure that all staff, all teachers are trained in identifying risk factors of depression, of suicidal thoughts, of all of those things that we're seeing, because we are seeing some kids they're not really there. They are, they're sad. So that was, to me, telling, because the students themselves are seeing this. We have done a lot of training in our area on first, it's called the mental health first aid, and it is to identify those factors. And then we partner with agencies to stretch the dollars for our districts so that they can have those supports. At the beginning, so we had pre-pandemic, right? And then pandemic, and then we saw a lot of people just, I guess they rethought their priorities in life, and we saw a lot of people just saying, no, I'm not gonna work, I'm gonna take care of my children, I'm gonna, do something different. And there were a lot of positions in mental health in our region that were just not being filled. So then they, after post-pandemic, they started to be filled. And so we're seeing unevenness of opportunities, of resources, even in the region. So, and this is, we know that when students are in a very difficult stage, you can't find beds for them, you can't find resources, there's wait lists everywhere. So these are some of the things that, we need to continue to prepare all of our educators. And then you talked about, educator to educator and educators, we need to address their needs as well, right? Because as I said,
Absolutely.
everybody suffered through the pandemic, and we were all traumatized. That one of the things I did beginning with the pandemic was I started bringing my staff together. I started every week having virtual town halls, and I would just give them an update of what's going on because we didn't know. It was changing on a day-to-day basis. And then I started bringing a staff in and interviewing staff and saying, okay, how are you pivoting from, having the children in front of you to now having to do virtual classes? And then some thoughts that just stuck in my mind were like, for example, remember I interviewed a special ed teacher early on, and she said, I have had to rethink when I'm going to, work with my students because, and with our parents, because the schedule, I've had to be flexible. I may have to talk to the parents late at night or early in the morning. So I've had to really be flexible with my schedule. And that was like, those are things that our systems still today are struggling with, right? Why is it that everybody has to spend 10 months in kindergarten, first grade, third, second grade, and so on? Why can't they just continue on their own pace and based on their own abilities, And why is it that we need seat time? I'm so glad that the Carnegie unit is being rethought. Right?
We've been saying
So
that for
those
years,
are some of the
actually.
things that we talk about, and we, looking to really embark on some changes.
Absolutely. And Dr. Cruz, I always state this, right? I believe that we are one of the only industries that really don't embark upon aggressive feedback of our most important customers, right? Before we see product launch in various industries and before they even go beyond the I like to say minimal viable product stage or that iteration stage or that prototype stage before official launch, they always get the feedback of the customer, right? And I think we need to take that ethnographic approach in education to truly understand the needs and the desires and the wants of our students and our families, just like your student identified, to have this level of understanding the risk factors so that we can truly identify the appropriate interventions and supports that are needed. But I want to go back, I want to kind of jump, Dr. Cruz, and go back to what you were highlighting. With this needed shift or transformation, the compounding variables, and this whole aspect or this whole, I like to say, theme around AI. When I think about this whole theme around AI moving towards adequately preparing Generation Z and Generation Alpha for the 22nd century, because if we continue to say we're preparing students for the 21st century, we're outdated. So this whole aspect of generative intelligence, innovation for the 22nd century, these compounding variables. Now, in a simplistic contextual description, Dr. Cruz, how do we prescribe meaningful transformation and change in the AC stage of education after COVID? One, and then second, how do we shift a model to focus on skills exactly what we were talking about in Pittsburgh. Focus on skills when our education practices are rooted for knowledge development.
Right. And I think that's that, that's part of the challenge. I think it was great seeing you in Pittsburgh, great having those conversations, because I think one of the things that I walked away with is that importance of using all the resources in your community, right? Museums, because learning, I think one of the biggest shifts that we need to make is that we need to understand that learning needs to happen beyond the four walls of the classroom, and a lot of those things we saw in Pittsburgh, right? Students doing internships. We need, and we do that here with our students, doing work-based learning, having students really, we have our one of our STEM high schools where students have to come up with their own 1 week. Where are they going to spend a week shadowing a professional so that they can explore that field broadly and determine if that's really where they want to go, right? So that is a big part of our learning and the shifts that we need to make, because learning for within the four walls of the classroom, especially with artificial intelligence, our kids can find so many things right now. And some folks are a little reluctant to artificial intelligence, so students are cheating. I'm like, no, let them explore and let them use the tools so they can write better. I almost want, yeah, let them write an essay using a artificial intelligence, and let's then talk about it. How can we make this better? I wish I had artificial intelligence. I would be having a blast in the classroom, and I'm sure you would too.
Yes, especially during the dissertation process, Dr. Cruz.
Right. Right. You can take data now from all these sources out there and get it summarized in seconds for you. I mean, come on, this is like, and then of course you need to check your data, and that's why it's important. They talk a lot about these, I like to call them essential skills, problem solving, critical thinking, creativity, collaboration, communication, digital literacy, including that discerning, what's true and what's, because if you go to, let's say you write an article using ChatGPT, let's say, but then you need to make sure that those sources that, if you ask for sources, that those sources are real. So you need to be able to discern and have that critical eye. So I think, they used to call them 21st century skills. To me, they're essential skills, and they are tied to the skills that we need to build for the future, for our students. Because I mean, content, yes, we need to know how to read. We need to know how to do basic arithmetic. We need to understand how to solve a problem, but we need to go to higher levels, right? We need to, and Bloom's taxonomy, had creativity, problem solving, all the way on the top. And we need to exploit that, bring it to the next level, right? Using all the technology we have at our fingertips. We did not have that, Never mind when we were doing our dissertations, just think about our classroom experience, right? We used to go to the library and go and look through catalogs to find a book that we wanted to read. We don't need to do that anymore.
The car catalog, Dr. Cruz. Wow.
We need to really change our, you know, change what we're doing and understand that our kids are wired differently as well. You know,
Yes.
they are tech savvy when they're babies. They know how to find pictures on their on an iPad. They know how to find a show that they, I mean, I have grandchildren that are 6 and 8. They've been using devices since they're babies. And so how do we teach those our students? You know, Richard Collada has a great book around you know that the fact that our children are really living between two worlds, an
Yes, they are.
in-person world and a virtual world, right? And how we need to ensure that they're prepared and they have the skills to interact and be safe, responsible, virtual citizens as well. So
Absolutely.
I think you know, we just need to keep that at the forefront because it's a different world.
Absolutely. And to my audience, I say this every episode, Dr. Cruz. We use this as an asynchronous professional learning platform so that whether it be leaders or CEOs of different education technology firms will be able to replay certain segments of an answer to incorporate into their professional practices. And you gave, I counted at least six different strategies, Dr. Cruz, that can be applied naturally in the leadership role. But I think the broad mega theme is around this future of work and the future of the world. I think that, Dr. Cruz, we need to, and you elaborated on this so eloquently, that there needs to be this level of AI ethics as we continue to on-ramp students, right? So that, you know, that they are cognizant and aware of some of the pitfalls and barriers of AI. But expanding on Richard's theme from his book, yes, students are living in two worlds. I like to say this, Dr. Cruz, is, and I say this all the time, and it kind of irks educators, and I do it during keynotes, and I'm like, I don't care. Our students are living in a world of Amazon Prime where they're engaging in multi-sided platforms, but they go back to a blockbuster education every single day. So when Richard's talking about those two different worlds that they're living in, I always say they're living in two educational worlds where one is outdated, archaic, i.e., the blockbuster structure, versus now when they go back in their natural economic worlds and engage in the demands of the worlds, it's more on the lines of these advanced AI and generative platforms that they're engaging with every single day. I loved how you categorized it as essential skills, Dr. Cruz, because that is essentially what it is. Not 21st century skills. If we're still referencing 21st century skills, we're completely further exacerbating the gaps that we're seeing within our students, but essential skills that are needed for this 22nd century. Dr. Cruz, last question. I promise, last question. You made it. Now, Dr. Cruz, for previous guests that appear on VFB, I try to limit them to three words, but again, they continue to expand on it. So I say this to every single guest that appears here. Take it as it is, Dr. Cruz. But what three words do you want our audience today to leave our podcast with regarding excellence for all?
So let me just give you the book that I was re referencing, Digital for Good: Raising Kids to Thrive in an Online World by Richard Collada. So I would say, partner. You know, I said, don't do this alone. You can't do this alone. You have to start with partnering with your number one partners in education, which are the families and the parents, right? And then you have to expand from there. So, you know, your community agencies, your churches, your school system, you know, and the larger society. So partner, don't do this alone. I would also say that we need to celebrate diversity and continue to foster belonging and inclusion. Our children, we talked about the mental health issues. We see depression, isolation. We need to ensure that our children feel a sense of belonging in our systems, right? That they see themselves represented in their staff. There's plenty of research, as you know, that shows that when the children see themselves represented in the staff that are teaching them, they do better. So we need to continue to work on that pipeline, the diverse pipeline of educators, not only at the teacher level, but at the principal building level, central office level, and superintendency, right?
Absolutely.
So I think that would be, so celebrate that diversity. We need to see that as an asset. Too often, when children come to our systems and have a different language, we it's not a deficit. It's really an asset that we need to continue to develop and build
Even better,
upon.
Dr. Cruz, even better superpower, as Dr.
That's the
Cardona always
superpower,
says.
right? That's as our Secretary of Education talks about, bilingualism is a superpower for sure. And trilingualism and multiculturalism is a superpower. So we need to do that. And then we need to really empower our learners and not see them only as recipients of knowledge, but as I go back to co-creators of their journey. And their families need to be involved because, you talked about get, we often don't get feedback from our primary customers, who are our children, our students, and our families. I love feedback. And I love talking to kids and telling them, if you could change something right now in your school, what would that be? And when they do tell me, I go back to the adults and I say, hey, this is what the kids are saying. We need to change this. And things happen. And when they see things happen, and I go again and I say, so how are things? You talked to me last time about this. Thank you so much for working on that and helping us change that. And they really then see themselves as part of that journey. And then embrace AI, embrace all the different technologies and bring them into your system, and just make sure that you have the opportunities for staff and for our children to really use that to improve their teaching and learning process.
Absolutely. Excellence for all, defined by Dr. Cruz. Partnering, very important. And I want to elaborate on the celebrating diversity, belonging, and inclusion. And Dr. Cruz highlighted the importance of representation, specifically too, when we talk about representation at the executive leadership level and even at the site-based leadership level. Dismantling gender inequities is very important, seeing more women in the executive leadership role. So when we talk about representation, and then also, when we talk about representation of dismantling these gender inequities in the computer and AI science areas, we need to stop seeing more men in these roles and have it more equitable where our women feel a sense of belonging and inclusion in these important areas. I want to highlight that. Thank you for bringing that up, Dr. Cruz, and empowering our learners and embracing innovation. Dr. Cruz, thank you so much for being on VFE. It was such an honor and pleasure to have you on. If my listeners or viewers want to reach out to you, Dr. Cruz, and to continue expanding on the strategies as well as applications that you presented in this episode, how would they be able to get in contact with you?
Very easy, very easy. They can contact me at gcruz, GCRUZ at Questar, QUESTAR.org. Please reach out. I love to hear from people from across our great nation, and I love to interact and share ideas and exchange ideas because there's so many great things happening in public education, and we just need to ensure that those things are broadcasted widely.
Absolutely. Dr. Cruz, thank you so much for being on VFE. I am an admirer of your work, 3 hours away in the same state.
That's awesome. You need to come visit.
Yes, I will. Down in the Albany area, I will love to come and see you, Capital Region area. I just love New York. I love the state of New York and the people and the leaders that are here, especially you, Dr. Cruz. Thank you for everything that you're doing for the state as well as what you're doing across the country.
Thank you so much. It's been a true honor to have this conversation with you.
Thank you. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.